Hey everyone, welcome to episode 19 of the Historic Performance Podcast. I'm your host, James Darley. If this is your first time listening, thanks for tuning in. The Historic Performance Podcast is published every Tuesday and Thursday, and notes from today's show can be found at www.historicperformance.net/podcast. You can connect with me via Twitter at Historic Perform. There I publish all the latest episodes and give you the opportunity to ask questions to future guests. In today's episode, I chat with NSCA High School Coach of the Year, Fred Eves. Fred works as the Director of Wellness at Battleground Academy in Franklin, Tennessee. Within this episode, we talk about youth athletic development, his role at Battleground Academy, their unique wellness program, and program design. It's a really informative episode. I think you're really going to like it. Let's get the show started. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Historic Performance Podcast. Today, I'm really excited and honored to be here with Coach Fred Eves. Coach Eves works in high school, and he was named the NSCA 2015 High School Strength and Conditioning Coach of the Year. So a very knowledgeable person. And I really feel that the high school setting and youth development doesn't get highlighted enough, especially in podcasts and just in general, in terms of blog posts from some of the strength coaches in this country. So I'm really looking forward to this podcast. And Coach Eves, how are you today?
Oh, I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing really well. Super pumped and excited for this. To start us off, could you give us a little brief history about yourself and how you ended up at your current role right now?
Sure, absolutely. You know, I always joke that I ended up being in the field of strength conditioning by accident. I was convinced by about the time I was in sixth grade, I was going to be a history teacher and a football coach, and that's what I was going to do. So I, you know, kind of went on that route through college, and you know, got to a point in college where I was doing some personal training, working at a gym, and was approached about a position with a local high school training their athletes. And I thought, oh yeah, that's a good way for me to get in as a football coach. So yeah, I went and applied for that and got the job. And the head of school was also the football coach, and he remembered me as a player. We had actually played against that high school. And yeah, so I got the job, and every day I would tell him, hey, coach, by the way, I could coach a position, you know, I can do whatever you need. And he would just remind me of my role. And I guess it was, you know, probably about a month into that, I realized, you know, I kind of found what my passion and what my calling was. So that's kind of how I got into the field to start with. And I started at a high school and knew pretty quickly that I needed to go work under someone to get better. I wanted to, you know, it's for me, and you'll hear this a lot from me throughout this, it's about my kids. It's about the impact that I'm making on them. So I knew that at that age, you know, early 20s, I wasn't quite prepared to do some of the things that I was trying to do with them. So I ended up going on to internships at UT Chattanooga, the University of Tennessee, later on at Louisiana State University. And I went and worked at the collegiate level to get that base. And, you know, of course, you know, in this field, it's constant professional development, which we've been doing all morning with my staff during our downtime during exams. So I got to that level, but at the same time, I always knew I wanted to be a high school strength conditioning coach. That was kind of, you know, that was just a means to an end for me of going to that level to do that. So I got the opportunity to do that and come back down, and you know, it's been great. You know, I've been at several high schools. I've now been at Battleground for the last 4 years, and I think we're able to implement a pretty unique program through the K-12 level here. So that's kind of the short condensed version of how I ended up where I'm at.
That's actually an interesting. I think usually when most people get into college strength and conditioning, they're usually not thinking of coming back to the high school level to coach there. Was there any reason that you wanted to go back to high school and you knew that was your end goal?
Absolutely. That was about an impact for me. I felt like that if I was at the high school level, that I would be able to make a larger impact on who they were as people. I felt like those were formative years for kids, and that if I could get to that level, that I could really do what I feel like is you know, more of my talent or more of my passion, which is developing them as human beings.
Absolutely. You know, it's absolutely key time for adolescents as they're growing up. To get to what you do at Battleground Academy, I know I listened to a podcast and you mentioned that you started there and it was a very small position and it's grown throughout the years. So could you give us an overview of how many sports are currently at Battleground Academy and how your position has grown?
Sure, absolutely. There was kind of always the vision for the position to grow. But it just kind of happened in stages. So, you know, and that's really a lot of forward thinking on the part of the institution, to have the vision and the mindset that, hey, we want to create a program where our kids are involved in a unique program from the time they walk through our doors in kindergarten until the time they graduate. And we're developing physical literacy at a young age, and we're building the proper foundations at our middle school level to lead into our upper school. So I really want to, I mean, that's really a lot about Battleground Academy. They had the vision to not only want to do that over time, but also build an unbelievable facility, which we can talk about a bit later, to be able to house that and do those things and staffing wise. But yeah, it started out, you know, I was kind of I was hired in as a strength coach and, you know, coaching football as well. I'm a big fan of coaching on the field. I think, and I've heard guys like Lee Taft talk about this, I think it helps you be a better strength conditioning coach. I really do. Being an on the field coach, I think, is very beneficial. I think they both helped me. It's in turn, being a football coach has helped me be a better strength conditioning coach. I think being a strength conditioning coach has helped me be a better football coach. And I feel like I grow in those areas each year. But yeah, it's, you know, like I said, I started out just early, just a strength conditioning role. It's gotten to the point of facility management, management of a staff, management of our program, kindergarten through the 12th grade level. So when I came through the door, it was kind of like, okay, let's get our upper school, which is grades 9 through 12. Let's get that squared away, if that makes sense, and create the program at the upper school. So after we did that, then it was, okay, let's go down to the middle school and let's redo the program there and let's get it in line with what we're doing from that 9th through 12th grade level. And we kind of I started this thing with the vision in mind of working backwards, if that makes sense. Then from there, last year was kind of the last bit of the implementation of how we wanted to do things, of going down to our lower school, the K through 4 level. So we've got our lower school, which is kindergarten through 4th grade. We've got our middle school, which is 5th through 8th grade. And then we've got our upper school, which is 9th through 12th. And that was kind of the model of that. So I oversee all of that. I've also grown we've expanded our wellness program to include a lot of sports psychology. So I also teach an academic sports psychology class that a lot of our athletes take. And so, yeah, it's just constantly grown. You know, the way I coordinate with coaches, the athletic administration, it's a really neat position because I'm able to be involved a lot at the administrative level as well. So it's not just your typical, it's just the S&C coach role. I don't think that's how they view this position. My title is actually like director of wellness. So pretty much anything that comes through the door wellness-wise, whether it's someone from the community with a wellness proposal, anything, you know, comes to me. And I take a look at that and coordinate with our administration on which direction we want to go with that.
So you're not handling athletics, but you're also handling the physical education aspect of the school?
Absolutely. Yes. So we have two paths for our students when they come into we everything is wellness. All of our classes are called wellness, which is, of course, a comprehensive program where we're going to have the physical education aspect. We're going to have the movement aspect. We're going to have the mental conditioning aspect. We're going to have the nutritional aspect. We've really started working, you know, this is huge in our field right now, the more the recovery aspect, stress management. You know, I talk a lot about how our kids, this generation of kid, we ask a lot of them training wise. We ask them to do a lot more than they've ever done at any time in history in athletics in this country. You know, when I was a kid, we weren't asked to train year round. We were really just asked to play football during football season, play baseball during baseball season. Now we have travel teams, we have year-round competition, we have year-round training, and everything has kind of, you know, even academically, the ante's been up there as well. Everything's just more. So we've really took a hard look at how we, one, monitoring's huge for us, and we can go on that a bit later as well. How we monitor, how we teach these kids to deal with the stress, time management, those types of things. So yeah, it's definitely much more than just a physical education program. That being said, we have two paths for our kids. If you play a sport, you're on what we call athletic-based training program. If you don't play a sport, you would be on our lifetime wellness program. So those programs it aren't completely separate. It would essentially be the lifetime wellness program would be very simple regressions of what we might be doing on athletic-based training program and making sure that these kids, because they need the same things. They need mobility. They need stability. They need strength. So that's kind of how we block those into two separate categories, depending upon what their needs are. And then we block our athletes into five different levels, which I know we're going to talk about training.
From a wellness aspect, what are you doing with the K through fourth grade? Because that's usually an age group that is not covered at all.
Yeah, absolutely. Very, very general. They're going to be doing a lot of stuff that we want to get away. Probably the where we had to go back was everyone was wanting to get very specific at that age. We're playing this sport. We're doing this. So we want to teach them basic skills, teach them basic locomotor patterns, teach them basic movement skills, make sure they're crawling, make sure they're skipping, those different types of things, just to give you an overview of what that looks like. Instead of, hey, your arm's got to be in this position when you throw the ball. We want to stay away from the specialization at that age and keep everything very general, so they're allowed to develop properly from a neurological aspect.
Yeah, and I mean, it's really refreshing to hear that a high school has both two tracks of wellness and they're not just specifically caring about their athletes.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's a big thing for us. I probably take as much pride in the kid who's not playing a sport as I do the kid that is, because I know that they don't have to be in here. There's no one who's, and no one has to be in here, but for them, it's even a bigger stretch. Why would I want to do that? So we want to make sure that's an extremely comfortable environment for them. We want to make sure that they feel like I belong, that that's somewhere where I'm going to get better. And that's probably one of the greatest compliments. I actually got this from our director of advancement when he came through. It was like, hey, I saw a guy working with like 5 pounds on the bar, and there's no judgment in the room. That's just what he does, because from an aspect of what we teach our kids, it's all about you and your progress. We try to be very intrinsic with everything we do.
That's absolutely great. I mean, especially during that age, as you're getting into an adolescent, I know there's so much peer pressure, and people are sometimes wary or scared, and they don't want to seem like, especially when you're in a weight room, that you're weak. So
absolutely,
it's really great to hear that that's what you've, that's the culture that you've instilled there.
Well, it's a testament to our kids as well. I mean, that I always say it only works if our kids are willing to buy into that, if our kids are willing to treat each other with that respect, if our kids are willing to bring those along around them. So I definitely want to give a shout out to our kids about that, because they do a tremendous job of welcoming everyone into our environment.
How have you been able to instill those values in those kids that they have that buy-in process?
Sure. I mean, I always say with this, I think a lot of it is being very consistent, and I think the next big thing is model what you're talking to them about. If I ask them to be good people or be respectful people, then I should be modeling that for them each day. I think that's really where it starts, is what behavior are you modeling? Am I late for meetings? Am I late for class? For me to be on time, for me to use the proper verbiage when I'm speaking to them, for me to treat them with respect, for me not to yell at them, for it to be a positive environment. I think if you model those things to begin with, it's so much easier to draw that out of them, because they kind of know who you are. They know your expectations, and they also, kids thrive on consistency. And we talk a lot about, we're not going to lower our expectations to meet anyone else's, that we feel like they will rise to the level of our expectations for them. We're going to do that in a positive way. That's not a negative connotation, but we want to have high expectations for them. But at the same time, we want to have high expectations for ourselves and model that. And I think that's really where that starts.
To transition a bit now to the high school level, obviously when you have a freshman and you have a senior, there's a significant difference in their training age. What type of athlete assessment do you use with high school players that are interested in athletics and are a part of a team?
Sure, sure. We are in a, in, you know, I've talked to a lot of different guys at the high school level. Pretty much, it seems like around the world, it, you don't get a lot of time with your kids. That's, I've kind of seen that's a theme. So we're going to have our guys 30 to 32 minutes for 3 to 4 sessions a week if they're enrolled in the wellness class during the day. So we've got to be very efficient with what we do. We do the FMS. We'll do that once a year. And I would like to do it more, but during the rest of the year, we do something called a dynamic movement warm-up screen developed by Mike Bewley at Georgia Tech. He's a basketball strength coach there. So that allows us to look at a lot of different problem areas during our dynamic warm-up on our movement days. So that's something we use to help assess. I think of assessment, honestly, like every day is an assessment for me. Every time they do something, every time they do a movement, every time that they're in a squat, it's an assessment for me because there's so much that I think you could take from that. I also like the overhead squat. I think it, to me, I always call the overhead squat the great indicator. It tells me a whole lot about an athlete and some of the things I need to adjust from there. So, you know, that's just the kind of walk through the door assessment. What do we look at? The first thing we'll do is have them move. What do they move like in a dynamic warm-up? And kind of, you know, we make notes throughout that. And then we'll take them into some of our more complex movements in the dynamic movement warm-up screen and things like that. And we'll try to hit that FMS once a year on that end. You know, we do the basic standards as far as everything else. We're going to do a 10. We do the 10 more times a year than we do the 40. They'll only do a 40-yard dash if they're in an off season, which most of my kids are going to be in season year-round. We're going to do the 5-10-5. Once again, that's an off-season deal for us. Change of direction, vertical for vertical power, and broad jump for horizontal power. We keep it pretty simple, pretty standard with our kids and what we track, what we measure.
Do you also just track some of the basics like weight, height, and seeing how they're growing through their peak height velocity?
Absolutely, yes. We track weight weekly. Sometimes in the summer, we'll do it a little more than weekly. Depending upon if they're in 2-a-days or if they're in camp, that's a 2 or 3 time a day weight process. We track height, of course, because it's always fun to have those statistics whenever they come through as a freshman and they're, you know, 5'7", they leave 6'4".
Yeah, so,
yeah, we track all that. You know, some other things we do from a monitoring perspective is every day we use a platform called Conduct. The kids will go in and they will log in and they've got a survey that they take where it'll, you know, how much did you sleep? How much did you drink? How much did you eat? Pretty standard stuff. And we've got a points system total attached to that. So through this platform, they fill that out on their phones. It takes like a minute. They send the information for me. If I pull up what I call my A period, then I have all those guys up and I see their rating from 0 to 100. Of where they're at off of those statistics of off of what we got off the survey for measurements. So that's kind of things we have in our Nutri-Carina nutrition model. We have a nutrition calculator in there where they can keep up with that. So we feel like if nothing else, if we can create awareness to these things, then that's going to help them know, hey, but I need to get some more sleep. Hey, I need to drink some more water, different things like that. So I do use Omega Wave. I've got some Omega Wave units. We use our kit. Omega Wave has been very, very good to us. And so right now I'm actually looking at, you know, off of some, I know you had Dr. Brian Mann on the podcast. I'm looking at, how our kids are responding during exam time, times of high academic stress, what their readiness levels are during that. So that's going to be interesting as we get through the next week or two to look and see where we're at there.
No, definitely. That's going to be a very interesting assessment to see how HRV is being impacted through these stressful periods. I've been reading a couple of the infographs that Jan Lemur does on Twitter, mm-hmm. and he recently had one in terms of how injuries seem to skyrocket during these stressful periods, during whether it's exams or other periods of high stress. So
yes.
Sometimes we forget that.
No, I think here at Battleground, we do a tremendous job with that. They have a 1 hour rule. Practices cannot be longer than 1 hour for the winter sports during that time. They don't play competitions during that time. And we already start toning down what we do in here. It's very, 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 you know, it's essentially unloading period for us. So we try to be cognizant of that and understand that that's where they're at, and they've got a lot going on, because, you know, we all know the body deals with stress in the same manner, know where it's coming from. It doesn't matter where it's coming from.
From a training program perspective, you mentioned that you have between 30 and 32 minutes. What are some of the main movement patterns that you try to integrate within your training program? And how do you go about in terms of regressing and progressing depending on the athlete?
Sure, absolutely. For us, it's going to be the basics. I mean, we're going to squat, we're going to hinge, we're going to push, we're going to pull. We're going to keep it simple. I'm a big fan of bang for your buck in that amount of time. So if you're looking at what do we do, well, how do I do a warm up when I've got 32 minutes to train someone? You know, for us, that's really simple. It's a kettlebell warm up that we do, where we're going to get a hinge pattern. We do kettlebell swings. We're going to do kettlebell goblet squats, and then we're going to do an inchworm out to a push up position. You know, from there, we're tier system. I don't know if a lot of your listeners are familiar with that. That works very well for me in this situation, because on my first tier, it's going to be my highest volume and my highest intensity. The volume and intensity will go down on the subsequent tiers. That works very well for me in this situation. And we'll have different emphasis for different days. So one day may be a total body emphasis. One day is a lower body emphasis. One day is an upper body emphasis, just standard Joe Ken tier system. So that's kind of, I'm big on bang for your buck, big movements with these kids. At the same time, we have to have a high pace. We get a lot done in a short amount of time. We will have, so like every tier, if I'm on tier one, I may have a hex bar deadlift and couple that with a wall tap for patterning. And then I may have band pull aparts. And as soon as they finish the hex bar deadlift, they go hit 10 wall taps, they go hit 15 band pull aparts, come back to the hex bar deadlift. So we put three exercises on each tier, if that makes sense. Yeah. So that would be a total body emphasis for us. Does that kind of answer the setup that you're looking for there, kind of how we do it, put that together? Does that make sense?
No, definitely. It does make sense. How many tiers do you have?
We have five tiers. Most of our class is going to work. The goal is to get through three tiers, to get through your standard, what Joe Ken would call a 3x3. So the goal is for you to get through your top three tiers. Now, our off-season guys, if you do happen to be in the off season, you'll come back after school and you'll finish your last two tiers, and then you'll do whatever other type of work, supplemental work that we may have from there, depending upon what you play, you know, what your position needs are and things like that.
The next question that I have is actually, we touched upon it before, and that was about a little bit about your monitoring and how you mm-hmm. go about in terms of determining sleep quality and nutrition. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's raising awareness with the kids themselves, but especially at this age, the parents have a big influence in terms of what they're eating, because I'm sure their parents are the ones that are cooking dinner. Yes. at most times. Yeah. So how do you go about creating a awareness for parents?
Sure. Part of it is, you know, conversation. You know, it depends upon the situation. Most of our parents are, I am blessed that our kids are in an affluent atmosphere. So there's not really a challenge of whether the food's available or not. Our dining hall is tremendous. It's kind of an all you can eat deal. And we've got everything in there. They've got two hot bars. They've got a salad bar. They've got a dessert bar. They've got a sandwich bar. Chocolate milk is flowing. So it's a paradise in there. I don't have to worry about lunch. We'll have a program where we allow kids to buy nutritional shakes after a workout. We're actually getting that kicked up in the spring. We do it during the summer. We've always had those types of shakes in a vending machine, but we're trying to make it a little bit easier process for our parents and for our kids at a little bit better price as well. But most of the parents, it's an educational process of conversation first. If we think there's the need for it, if we're trying to help a guy gain weight, I don't have a lot of kids who need to lose weight. That's not really the population that I deal with. And then we do things through our parent teacher nights, through our different presentations that we put on, some open times throughout the year. We're kind of an open door policy. My assistant has a BS in nutrition. That's kind of his background. We refer a lot to Mike Buehle's Nutri-Carina program that's created by a registered dietitian. And we've got that, and the parents can look into that information anytime they want to. So we encourage that. And like I said, we've got an open door policy, and there are several presentations throughout the year. Every now and then I may just shoot an email out, you know, about a different topic in nutrition or this, that, and the other that we do. And we're in the process of creating a monthly blog for that on our new website right now, would be how we reach out to parents. But I have no issue if there's a guy who's losing weight, man, I'll just, you know, email the parent, call the parent and say, hey, you know, what's going on? You know, how can we help him? How can we be of service to you guys?
The next topic that I actually want to cover deals with the coaches themselves. So the coaches of the individual athletic teams. I'm sure when you're going out in terms of the hiring process at Battleground Academy, you're looking for coaches that are going to mesh within this philosophy.
Absolutely.
Because I know in some instances you may have coaches and strength coaches that don't exactly get along, don't see eye to eye. Mm-hmm. How do you feel that it's important to build a relationship and communication with the actual, technical coach, as they would say in soccer, but the coach of the team?
Sure. My situation's unique from a lot of places where I don't, the sport coaches don't dictate how we train kids here. That being said, that is not the attitude that I take with our sport coaches. I really work hard to listen to what they feel their needs are and to accommodate them in the best way possible. In the end, I kind of have the say on what we do and what we don't do. So on that end, but to be honest with you, I think our administration does an excellent job of identifying people who are going to fit into our philosophy and fit into to our what we believe from a principal standpoint of what we're doing with athletes. And we really just don't have a lot of issues. I do say that, you know, if there is something that we run into that we've hired a new coach and for whatever reason they're just not on board, that, you know, first conversation we're going to have is going to be really nice. The second conversation is going to be really nice. The third conversation is going to be really nice. But by the fourth time, I'm probably not going to be as nice, and I'm going to be very direct about who controls our training. And just say in the end, this is what it is. But I've only had to get to that conversation one time in my 4 years here. So we have and there's no one on staff here that I've had to get the conversation with. We've got a great crew of people, and I'm very, very blessed. I know that can be hard. I think if you're in a situation that that is being dictated by a technical coach or a sport coach, then you've really got to work hard to sell them on what you believe and just inundate them with information and flood them with why you should be doing it this way. Why you should be doing it the way that you believe. And I've been in situations where I've had to do that before.
No, absolutely. And I think that's a great testament to what's being done at Battleground Academy, that there is that communication, positive relationship, rather than other places where you have a negative relationship and it's more of a power struggle than working along one another.
No, and I think it's important that you let those coaches know how much you care about their sport and how much you care about their kids. I mean, that to me is the biggest thing. Of if they know that you really, really care about their sport and you care about their success and you care about the development of their kids and their athletes, there's no choice. They're going to be on board. You can't not like someone who's working their tail off for you and wants you to be successful. And that's what I found over the years. If I just show them, if I'm showing up at games, if I'm doing what I should be doing and building my relationships with them, ultimately if I've got a relationship with someone, it's going to make it a lot easier to sell whatever it is I need to sell to them to do what's best for our athletes.
No, definitely. I mean, people respond better when they know you and they know that you're working your tail off and understand their sport. I mean, if you're just this guy who's trying to jam something down their throat, their response is probably not going to be as positive.
Sure. Absolutely. Absolutely.
The next two questions that I have are actually questions that some of the listeners brought up. I posted both on Twitter and Facebook to see if they had any questions. So the first question is, what improvements have you seen in high school strength and conditioning since you started?
Okay. Exponential would be the first word. I always joke that at my first job, I remember saying I was a stipend coach making At first, I didn't know if I would be paid at all, and I was good with that. It was like, whatever. I just want to be here. I just want to work with the kids. I think I made like $1,200 my first year. I've still got that check somewhere. I made a copy of it and framed it. It was first time I'd ever been paid to coach anyone. The rest, it was, you know, I was pretty excited about it. So I remember sitting in the weight room saying, man, this would be really, really cool if I could like do this during the day as a job, you know, and get paid to do this all day long. You know, and you're looking at early 2000s thinking that to when I look outside and I've got a 6,000 square foot weight room and I've got a staff and I've got a 40 by 40 indoor turf field attached to the weight room. And we're able to implement Omega Wave. We're able to implement, you know, different companies like Train Heroic, Conduct with our kids and all the technology that we're able to use, velocity based measurement. You know, so it's kind of, it's been almost humbling to kind of sit back and look at, wow, over the last 17, 18 years, what's happened. And I think that we've got a long way to go in high school strength conditioning, but I think that I'm starting to really, really see a turn in how serious people take it. The quality of instruction. I think there's an awareness now that wasn't there before of, hey, there needs to be quality instruction at that level. There needs to be, and now we're even creating an awareness that there needs to be quality instruction at younger levels. We need to make sure that we're developing the correct properties in a proper LTAD plan. So it's been, I mean, unbelievable watching things change and watching things grow over the years to where, you know, I'm going to get on a conference call here at 1 o'clock today with 7 or 8 different high school strength coaches around the country that are unbelievable coaches. Unbelievable men doing great things with their kids. And I don't think it was like that 10 years ago. I think it was few and far between when you found a good high school strength coach. And I think that's really changing. I think there are a lot of really high quality strength coaches out there today.
That meshes really well with the second part of that question, which is, what do you feel needs to improve, especially when you're talking to colleagues at the high school level?
Sure. You talking about like personal improvement?
No, just overall in terms of like the high school strength and conditioning, I guess, map throughout the nation.
I think probably the largest thing that needs to change is the administration at schools understanding that the strength conditioning coach should be the authority on training in the school. And that shouldn't be dictated by a sport coach. I think that coach should be outside of those parameters of those sport coaches, because that can become a tough situation for them when you've got the football coaches demanding this, but yet you still got to train the baseball guys, and you've got to have the soccer girls, and you've got to have the volleyball girls, and they want all their attention focused on one sport. If you've got a coach who's been there a long time, who's had a lot of success, who can kind of dictate what you can do, it can make it can be a very tough situation. I'm busting on football because I coach it, but I know it happens in other sports as well. But football would be the one where people say that happens the most. I literally hear stories from guys around town at public schools that tell me, hey, we can't get our kids in the weight room because football's in there. And that's really sad to me that every student athlete, every person there doesn't get an opportunity to train. And so I think that's probably the biggest thing that I hear when I hear frustration from coaches. It's and I think you alluded to it earlier. I'm dealing with this coach. It wants me to do this, and they don't really have any reasoning why. And this is my passion. This is my life. This is what I do. I spend, you know, 12 hours a day doing this when they spend 10 minutes reading an article. Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's probably the biggest thing that I hear. And then I think at the high school level, resources can be a difficult thing sometimes too. I think, but I do think that once again, that's moving in the right direction of understanding. I think the biggest resource that's a problem at the high school level is staffing, having enough kids to coach the number of athletes you have. I think that's the largest, as far as resources go, beyond facilities and everything else. Not having enough qualified staff to work with your kids is probably the biggest hurdle in the high school setting. Maybe it's probably a hurdle in every setting, to be honest with you, but I think it's exacerbated at this level. So, I wanted to hit back to something. You asked me about regressions earlier, and I didn't answer that for you. I hate to have a question asked, and I don't answer regressions, or I don't answer it. So, when you were talking about how do you regress or progress your athletes, we've got 5 different training blocks for our athletes. We've got what we call it our wildcat block, but a block 0, Joe Kahn concept. Then we've got our white, gray, gold, and blue. We block everyone into different colors. And those are different developmental levels for them. Now, I could have a guy, regressions and progressions depend upon the athlete. We kind of have a baseline of where they think they should be, but we could be going anywhere from a body weight squat or a TRX squat all the way to a back squat. You know, I could have a guy who's on our blue level that you know, in theory would be a guy who's back squatting, who I'm only doing front squat with him because of something that's, you know, something anthropometric is going on with him. So that's kind of just as far as we want to make sure we try to have at least three regressions and three progressions from the middle ground. That's very Mike Boyle-ish. But we can even go deeper than that if we need to. The simple rule for us is we will regress them to wherever they need to go, and we will progress them to wherever they need to go. We're trying to meet them wherever they're at.
This is a question that I think a lot of the soccer guys who are out there listening, because we have a lot of Europeans, we have a lot of Americans, both sides of the pond. When do you start externally loading your athletes? Is it a particular age, or is it when they show you that they've gotten to a point where they move well enough that they deserve to be externally loaded?
Sure. For me, that's going to be one, they move well enough. That's got to be the first property. And two, they've got to be able to move their own body weight. They've got to be able to you know, express that they've got relative body strength to me. That's super important. I'm not externally loading them until then. Those are the two big things for me. Can you move well? And can you move your own body weight well? And if you can do those two things, in my opinion, you're going to be pretty successful going to an external load.
So age doesn't matter. If there's a 14-year-old that can do that, or if there's a 16-year-old that you can do that, you're still going to externally load the 14-year-old.
Yeah, I would say freshman year. I would say pretty much the second half of freshman year is when most of our guys are going to be ready, which is going to be that 13-14-year-old range. Now, external load doesn't mean max effort external load. That means we just have an external load. That may be a training bar. That may be, at that point when they're 14 years old in their freshman year, we feel pretty good about that if they move well and they've got good relative body strength. I wouldn't do that with a 10-year-old, if that makes sense. So they ought to be able to move their own body weight at 10. But talking from an age perspective, it's not as much about their chronological age as it's their physiological age. Yep. Cause I may have a 15-year-old who looks like a 12-year-old, and we're going to keep him down a little longer. I will, for the sake of his progression, I'll start throwing some newer things into him, and I may tell him, hey, you're on the gray program now. But his gray program is going to be very, very much a white program in a lot of ways because he hasn't hit puberty yet. So we've got to keep him. We've got to kind of hold him back to the point that his physiology catches up with him.
Just going to finish off with the two audience questions, since I know you have that phone call at 1. The next one is, how do you go about fitting the different teams in one day in terms of scheduling?
Sure. We've got wellness classes during the school day. So that makes it a lot easier for me. Now, the hard part of that is in my class, we split them into all male classes and all female classes. But within that class, I'm going to have all five of those developmental levels. I'm going to have a 9th grader through a 12th grader. And I'm going to have kids who don't play a sport and kids who do play a sport. So that's the challenge of that. But the way we structure our program, because if it's a session L day, everyone's squatting in some manner. Maybe a body weight squat for one guy, maybe a back squat on a tendo unit for a high level guy. So everyone's kind of in the same spot as to what we're doing. It's just we go back to those regressions and progressions there. So scheduling is not a huge deal for me during the school year because everyone trains during the day. I would say about 90 to 95% of our athletes are enrolled in the wellness class during the school day. The kids who are not enrolled during that, I make a schedule where they have to lift 2 times a week, and that's usually based around their competition schedule. But because it's not a majority of our kids, I can have 2 or 3 teams in here at the same time because it may only be 10 kids, 10 or 15 kids. So the way we've dealt with that problem is by having the classes during the school day.
I just have a follow-up on that. So you have instances where the teams aren't together when they're lifting. They're just they could have different team members lifting at different times because they're part of the wellness classes. So you might have one football player lifting at 10 a.m. and another football player lifting at 3 p.m.
Yes. Okay. Yes, absolutely. And that's, and that's kind of, you know, we have an adjustment board on top of everything else we do where I may have that football, the football player who's on our white program, who's 14 years old and not playing is on a, and it's in season football is on a much different deal than what the guy who's 18 years old on our blue program and is, you know, a two-way starter. That's a very different look for them. So I'm changing volume. I'm messing with intensity and different things like that for those guys to kind of work all that. It all kind of, it sounds complicated, but I got a compliment from a guy one time that there's a, you know, there's a simplicity in your complexity. So it's really, it really flows really well because everyone's kind of, they're either working on, you know, they're on the same, the tiers are the same. We're doing the same thing. It's just about their regressions. It's just about their progressions. So to harp on that like crazy, I think that's what's made the program be able to flow the way we need it to and have all those different things going on.
Last question I have is actually from a friend and colleague, well, professional colleague, is Dan Heckler from Northeastern University. He's a part-time strength conditioning coach there. His question is, where do you feel that you need to improve as a strength and conditioning coach and why?
Sure. I saw that one. That's a hard one because you got to do that. You know, self-evaluation can always be difficult.
I told him that.
So, I would say that I feel like I can improve in every area as a strength conditioning coach. If I'm saying, what am I really working on right now? I would say it would be energy system development. That, you know, I'm in a situation where my kids are competing year round. So I don't get long blocks to, you know, to go through a full conditioning program and this, that, and the other. At times I get them in the summer. Most of their conditioning that I do with them happens in the summer. And they go for 3 weeks. They get 2 weeks off in the middle. It's a mandatory dead period that our state has. And then they come back for 2 weeks and then they go into camp. And then at that point, in the past, we actually talked about this. In the past, our sport coaches have conditioned them from that point on, the technical coaches. From here on out, we're going to ride all that conditioning for them because they're going to have a 4 week stretch until they play their first competition. Football, I'm there all the time, so I directly do that. Our practice pace is high enough. We don't have to condition. Our practice itself is conditioning. But yeah, I think, you know, I always feel like I can improve in every area. But I think if I'm looking at one area that's the most for me right now, it's just energy system development. I have a greater understanding of that. And, you know, I continually reach out to guys like Mike Robertson, and I know I'm headed to the Joel Jamison seminar that Mike's hosting in January. To just continue to do that. So we're the next 2 weeks for us here is all professional development. We're looking at stuff that we do. We're looking at stuff that's way outside of what we do to get different perspectives. And I think it's just being open and understanding that the longer I do this, the more I'm realizing the less I know, and being open to that and embracing that and understanding that that's not such a bad thing. You don't have to know everything.
You just have to continue to learn.
Right. Absolutely. Just continue to be humble, you know, and continue to learn and continue to seek out the people who are the best at that. Ask them why, you know, why they do what they do. And I mean, there aren't too many guys in this industry that won't connect with you is what I found over the years. They may be busy and it may take them some time. I found an email that I answered from October last night. Felt really horrible. I apologize to the guy repeatedly, but during football season, I'm not as good as at returning emails. I mean, I think just being willing to put yourself out there and ask questions and staying humble. I think that's a very, very important thing that can be lost in our society from time to time.
The way I like to end all my podcasts is having the guest, and especially someone who's been in this field for so long, such as you. What recommendations would you have for someone who's just starting out as SNC coach?
Sure. I think number one is, and I'm, you know, at times I'm seeing this with interns that we get, you've got to be the hardest worker. Because guess what? I'm putting in more hours than anyone else at our school. I work year round. I'm 12 months. I'm here all the time. So the first thing I would tell young strength and conditioning coaches, when you walk through the door in an internship or whatever it is you're doing, number one, don't don't try to be the smartest guy. Be the hardest worker, because bottom line is you're there to learn from them. So be the hardest worker around, and then they'll reward you with their knowledge. The second thing is the humility. Just because you've read this, that, and the other, you've gone to this seminar, you've got this certification, it takes years and years of seeing this in a practical setting to understand when to use this and when to use that. And that only comes with time and experience. And just it's okay to just be aware of what you don't know and just continue to strive to be better. But just having that, you know, and I'm harping on that a little bit, of the humility, the work ethic. And then I think you got to be smart about plotting out your course. You know, I told a guy last year, he was talking about interning with me or intern at the University of Alabama. And to me, that was an easy conversation because it's like, well, do you want to be a high school strength coach or do you want to be a college strength coach? Well, I want to be a college strength coach. Well, then that's an easy answer. Well, you need to go intern at the University of Alabama. So I think being very, very, you know, plotting out your course and having a direct vision and a direct path on where you want to go and not just bouncing around. Everything should be calculated. If you're going to do an internship with someone, it should be calculated while you're going there. What does that bring to you? How is that going to make you better? How is that going to develop you? Okay. Maybe from a professional aspect of just being a better coach, but maybe from a networking aspect. So, yeah. And don't be afraid to reach out to guys. Don't be afraid to reach out and ask questions. You know, there's no such, it's the old adage of there's no such thing as a stupid question. Anyone who treats you with that, you know, maybe you don't want to interact with that person anyway. So it's, you know, we charge you with going out and learning just like we are. That's something that you should never worry about. It shouldn't be a concern. Just ask those tough questions that maybe people aren't, you know, aren't willing to ask sometimes. You know, I had when I spoke at national conference at the NFCA in the summer last year, I had a guy, Joe Ken's son, who's just getting in the field, who's a college freshman right now, who wasn't afraid to ask a question, asked the best question in the room. And he, you know, he's not been coaching, he's been training. So, and I was really, really impressed that young guy had the confidence to say, hey, you know, what about this? So.
The next one, and it's a springboard off the recommendations, is any resources that have been particularly invaluable in your career development?
Yeah, I mean, I look at it at different pockets. You know, I look at, you know, it depends on what you're looking for. You know, are you looking at periodization? Are you looking at programming? I think, and I've harped on, you know, Joe's been a good mentor for me, but Joe Ken's Coach of Strength Training Playbook is one of the best ways to learn out how to lay out a program. You know, if you want to learn about energy system development, looking at Joel Jamison's Ultimate MMA Conditioning. If you want to look at, you know, the Greg Cook world, Greg Cook's movement, you know, looking at that, of some of the corrective, the FMS stuff. So to me, it's just kind of, what are you looking for? What are you trying to be better at? And where do you feel like you're deficient and you want to bring that up? So I think, you know, anything by Vern Gambetta, anything by, Cal Dietz, Triphasic Training. I think just getting into the field, if you haven't read Ron McKeefry, CEO Strength Coach, that's a must read. You need to read that book. I think I identified so much with reading Ron's path and where he's been and what he's done. And that guy is invaluable information wise that he puts out for coaches.
No, absolutely. Ron is doing so many great things, and especially with his podcast, giving out all that free information and everything that he's doing at his university. It's quite incredible.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So to me, that's what it's about. You know, if it's velocity based training, you had him on a while back, go find Brian Mann, talk to him, read his stuff. So that's to me, is like, you know, what is it that you feel like you want to start with? I think in the beginning, you know, and Ron talks about being the technician, you know, learn how to teach the list effectively. Okay. That's kind of the place to start. Then you work on being the manager and the programming side of everything and managing a staff. And then you look at from there, you know, if you want to go the entrepreneurship route. But I think just having those set stages of knowing where you're at and knowing where you want to be, I think are important. So there have been times in my career where I've spent, you know, I'm still looking at everything, but maybe I spent 3 years really looking heavily into speed development. Or maybe I spent 3 years really looking heavy into programming and looking at different styles of programming. I think exposing yourself to as much as you can so you could help develop your philosophy is good for you. I think that's an important thing.
If anyone wants to connect with you or has any questions, what's the best way that they can contact you?
Sure. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. It's at Coach Eaves. Just Coach in my last name. My email is Fred, just my first name, dot Eaves, E-A-V-E-S, at mybga.org. And feel free. Like I said, I'm a lot better at answering emails and things this time of year than I am during the football season. So I try to always get back. If I don't, it's because I lost your email somewhere in there, and shoot me another email back. Don't feel shy about doing that.
No, and when I publish the podcast, I'll be putting all of those links on my website so it's easily accessible. And just for listeners out there, like Coach Eve said, if he doesn't get back to you, make sure to follow up.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So,
Fred, it was a pleasure having you on. I'm really honored that you chose to come on the podcast. And I really hope that the listeners got to get a little bit of a feel of the high school setting and some of the things that you're doing at the Battleground Academy, which sounds fantastic.
Sure. No, thank you. The pleasure was all mine, James. I really appreciate it.
Have a great day.
All right. You too.
Thanks again for tuning in to another Historic Performance Podcast episode. If you enjoyed the podcast, make sure to leave a review and rating on iTunes. It really helps others discover the show. Happy holidays, and see you next time.